May the sacred presence of the one who said he would abide in his teaching be our guide tonight. May we follow his glorious example and tread with unfaltering step this noble path until we too shall attain enlightenment. Thank you. So tonight we're going to do the Lotus Sutra. Yay! I taught the Lotus Sutra 1 year with a Dharma sister, and in it it says, if you read this sutra, the Buddha will appear. And when we got all, we were like pretty excited about that. And when we got done, we all agreed the Buddha did appear. So it was pretty cool. But that's been a while. So welcome. I think before I start, I wanted to say, Sosetsu, where are you? Do you want to say something about your link?
I think Ginkgo put a link online at our Wednesday class site that has just links to some of the audio versions of the different sutras that we're studying.
They are there.
They are there. It's confirmed.
Okay. So that's a follow-up from last week. So tonight, I'm going to introduce the Lotus Sutra. Next week, Genko is going to continue with the Lotus Sutra. The Lotus Sutra, here's what I said in my notes. No other text that I know that is more loving and understanding of the human heart so intimately. So that's my take on the Lotus Sutra. I know a lot of people don't have a very, very different relationship with the Lotus Sutra. But in any case, it's a very important text that's been handed down. It's one of the earliest, if not the earliest, Mahayana Sutra. There's evidence of its existence as early as 50 in the current era. So that would be one of the earliest ones. It is considered to be, the thought is that it was probably oral in nature. So each chapter, there's a verse that would have been easy to memorize. It maybe rhymed, but it would have been easy to memorize. And then later prose were added. So it's kind of an unusual text that way. And it's influential both to many teachers, like Ryokan, that was the only sutra he had, and Dogen. I don't think I really understood Dogen until I studied the Lotus Sutra, because that was his favorite sutra. And he draws on it a lot for his teachings. But it also influenced art and poetry and culture, as well as a root sutra for many different sects of Buddhism. Let's see. So I like to do this because it kind of gives me a picture of the span we're talking about. So this would be about 500 years after the life of Buddha. So it'd be like something's happening, something new is happening, and it would be like between now and the 1500s. So if Buddha had lived in the 1500s, we would now just be getting to a place where, and I'm sure there was conversations about the meaning of Buddhist teachings all the way along, but this is a definite break in that Beforehand, it was more or less the path of purification. So you would work on your practice and work on the Buddhist teachings to purify yourself from your karma. And this is called the Bodhisattva path. It's the second turning of the wheel. Is that right, Chico? Second turning of the wheel. Okay. So the Bodhisattvas, so we are in the tradition of the Mahayana, the Soto Zen. And so this was a major shift historically for the teachings. And it's full of a lot of magical imagery and has kind of a dreamlike quality, which I think probably might be why some people are put off by it. So I've decided to take from the first half. So there were several texts, and they were at some point put together to create the Lotus Sutra. And then the first chapter and the last chapter were considered standalone sutras and kind of made the bookend for it. And I'm going to talk about the first half, not the first chapter, but the first half. And I'm going to do a really famous parable, but I'd like to do it in a different way, or I'm hoping it's different for you. It's called The Burning House. So in the beginning of the sutra, the Buddha's disciples come forward to him. And at some point he says, yes, you will become a Buddha. And then some of the other disciples go, well, what about me? Am I going to be a Buddha? So they come to Buddha, and he says, yes, yes, you'll become a Buddha. Pretty soon there's kind of like this line, you know, like, am I going to be a Buddha? And basically, that's kind of one of the messages of the Lotus Sutra is we are all on the path of becoming a Buddha, a realized Buddha, even though it might be many years or lifetimes from now. which is kind of interesting because it actually puts a lot of responsibility on us and our practice. And I think that's the way I came to this sutra. So it is the outflow from the innermost mind of the Buddhas. I took that from one of the texts. The purpose is to stir our minds of all people to seek supreme enlightenment, which is the wisdom of the Buddhas, and that its dwelling place is in performing the practices of the Bodhisattvas, which is the second half of the sutra. That all living beings, which of course includes yourself, have a fundamental value in their existence and are expressions of the universal life force. And when we live from this idea, great harmony will be achieved. That's kind of the message of Dharma rain, right? That we all, the rain falls evenly on the field and we take what we, each gets what we need. That there is a potential good in others, even those we perceive as our enemies, and they encourage us to realize our own capacity to be a Buddha. Thus, our enemies are helping us along the path. So this is the message of the Lotus Sutra. And finally, I was using a translation by Gene Reeves, and I really appreciated when he says, all readers of the Lotus Sutra would be well advised to ask what the story is saying about themselves. So I think that's when I started to really enter into the Lotus Sutra, is when I took it more from a personal perspective and said, what does this mean to my life? What does this actually mean for me? So the burning house starts with Buddha's meditating, and Shariputra comes up to him and says, "Why is it that the wisdom of the Buddhas is so difficult and nearly impossible to comprehend?" Don't we love Shariputra? And the Buddha says back to him, the reason it is like this is because we are all so very different and we understand the teachings differently. And that the Buddhas make these various teachings. Are you having trouble hearing me? Oh, okay. Make these teachings so that we can all enter the Buddha path. So the burning house has talking a little bit about then these different kinds of paths that we get to enlightenment. And in particular, there's the Shravakas, the Arhats, the Pratika Buddhas, which are people who alone just spontaneously become a Buddha, which is very rare. And then the Bodhisattva path. But all of these are vehicles, and they are within the one great vehicle. And the one great vehicle is the path to the great, is the Buddha's, the Buddha way, or the Bodhisattva path, and the Shravakas and the Pratika Buddhas are all equal and fulfill a need for different people. So I'm going to tell you the story and then a little bit of the symbolism. I'd like to, I printed out some verses so you could get a taste of how it reads. And then I thought we would break into groups, and I prepared some questions for you to discuss, and I thought we would come back and see how it goes. So the story starts with this description of a house that is falling apart. Its pillars are broken, the foundation's cracked, the ceiling's falling, and in the house, so it's very dilapidated, and in the house are all sorts of creatures and animals, and they're all doing all sorts of scary things, more or less. And the elder who owns the house comes, and one of the neighbors say to him, "Your children are inside." Oh, no, wait. There's smoke in the house, and then a fire breaks out. And the neighbor says, "Your children are inside the house." And of course, the elder, who is also considered the father figure, runs into the house, and there are his children, playing and deeply engrossed in games. And the first thing he says, "You know, the house is on fire. Come on, let's get out of here. Let's get out of here." And the kids pay no attention to their dad. And then in the prose, which is different than in the verse, but in the prose, he just considers carrying them out. "I'm going to carry them out." But then he understands that that won't work either. So then he comes up with the idea that he tells the kids, "I know there's outside the gate, I've prepared beautiful carts with little animals to care for you to play with, knowing that this would delight the children." And the children think that's a great idea. And they run out of the house through the gate and to find to play with their carts. So, and the father comes out, he's overjoyed. So this is an example of what the Lotus Sutra would call skillful means. And in the story, the house is kind of our constructed reality. So it's unstable. It's not grounded. It's falling apart, just like things we thought we knew all of a sudden aren't true. Or how our manas creates a reality for us. And the animals are quite vicious and bickering, and some of them are demons and mythical creatures. And I liken them to the energy of the culture around us. Actually, I was reading it before I put this together, and I thought, God, that sounds like newscasters. but anyway, if you have a chance to read it, you would start to hear people that you know, actually. And then the fire of desire that breaks out. It's birth and death, old age, death, grief, sorrow, lamentation. The burning desire that keeps us engaged in suffering. And the elder, of course, is Buddha, and the children are us. And then the carts represent the three vehicles, the Shravakas, Pratitika-buddhas, and the Bodhisattvas. What makes this skillful, there's three criterias that the Lotus Sutra holds up for what makes something skillful, and that's its appropriateness, its skillfulness, and its effectiveness. So I thought maybe that would be helpful when we break into groups and talk about it. What makes this effective? What makes it skillful? So with that, I'd like to, how many of us are there? All right, well, so I have this broken down into 10. I need like 10 volunteers to read the verses, and then those people I would like to be the group leaders. So when we break into groups, that would just kind of keep it simple. So could I have 10 volunteers? 10 volunteers. Woo, woo, woo. Do it. And then, thank you. That's not skillful. And then you can follow the line. I hope I have enough. On the back side, the verses are on two sides. There's little arrows, and that's where I cut some out because it was too long. So, who are my teachers? Okay, so I don't know who you are, but thank you for volunteering. So if you volunteer, there's a yellow marker on the left side of the verse, And that's the verse that you're going to read. So those of you who are volunteers, please find that, what verse you're going to read. I think it's just one thing. Okay.
So
we're going to read the verses, and then we're going to stand up, and we're going to go into groups. And on the back sheet are questions for the group. Okay, so does that make sense to people? All right. And what? The highlighted part is the part you're going to. Right. I'm not going to speak at all. So those of you who are going to read, could you stand up so people can hear you?
And I'll bring you a microphone.
Stand up. Those who are reading, stand up. Okay, that's so people can hear you more clearly.
Buddha speaking. Suppose there was an elder who owned a large house, and this house was very old, decaying and falling apart. Its great rooms were in dangerous condition, its pillars broken and rotting at the base, its beams and rafters leaning and askew, its foundation and steps in a state of collapse.
Okay, cool. 500 people were staying in that house with kites, owls, hawks, and eagles, crows, magpies, pigeons, doves, lizards, snakes, vipers, scorpions, centipedes and millipedes, newts and ground beetles, weasels, ferrets, rats and mice, all sorts of evil creatures scurried about everywhere. There were places stinking of excrement, overflowing with filth, where dung beetles and worms came together. Foxes, wolves, and jackals bit and trampled each other to gnaw on carcasses, scattering the bones and flesh.
Thank you. It says, that house was frightening, extraordinary. All over the place were goblins, ogres, and satyrs, evil spirits who devour human flesh, and all sorts of poisonous insects.
Such was the state of that house, dreadful in the extreme, with horrid calamities and a great fire, with many disasters, not just a few. At this time, the owner of the house was standing outside the gate when he heard someone say, "A little while ago, your children went into the house to play. They are young and ignorant and engrossed in play." Hearing this, the elder was alarmed and rushed into the burning house, intending to rescue the children and keep them from being burned in the fire. So he told his children of the many dreadful troubles, the evil spirits and poisonous creatures, the fire spreading all around, one kind of suffering following another without end.
"This," he said, "is a dreadful place. How much more so with this blazing fire?" But the children didn't understand. Though they heard their father's warnings, they remained absorbed in their games and did not stop playing. Then the elder thought to himself, "My children are acting this way, adding to my anxiety and anguish. Right now there is not a single thing in this house to enjoy. Yet my children, bewitched by their games, pay no attention to my instructions and will be destroyed by the fire. Then he considered devising some skillful means and said to his children, I have many kinds of rare, attractive playthings, wonderful, treasured carriages, goat carriages and deer carriages, and carriages with big oxen are now outside the gate. Go out and see them.
When the children heard him tell about the carriages,
a little louder, please.
When the children heard him tell about the carriages, they immediately raced each other, dashing out of the house to reach the open yard, away from the painful troubles.
Then the children, seeing their father sitting relaxed, came to him and said, Please give us the three kinds of treasured carriages you promised earlier. If you children come out, I will give you three carriages, and you can choose whichever you like. Now is the time. Please give them to us. The elder was very wealthy and had storehouses full of gold and silver, lapis lazuli, seashell, and agate, and other kinds of precious things.
Twisted golden cords with nets of pearls were spread over the tops of them, and garlands of golden flowers were hanging here and there. Many colored decorations were wrapped around them. They had cushions of soft silk and gauze. Great white oxen, sleek, sturdy, and strong, of handsome build, were yoked to the treasured carriages.
Then the children, ecstatic with joy, mounted the treasured carriages and rode around in every direction, playing joyfully, freely, and without hindrance. I tell you, Shariputra, I too am like this, most honored all the sages. I am the father of this world.
So hopefully you don't know a house like this in this world, so you can see kind of the magical quality of it. On the second sheet are some questions for a group discussion, and what I'd like is, I'm thinking about four people per group. With those people who read something, lead the group to a particular place. I think we can see on the end out, can't we? Still light enough?
I'm hoping people had interesting conversations. I'm wondering if some people would offer to kind of share with the larger group what was said or what was interesting.
Anyway, it was a bit of an interesting assignment. You know, we meandered around and didn't quite 100% sure what we were. I didn't feel like what we were doing. But, you know, obviously there's modern day analogs to this stuff. And because we were with Genko, we started talking about the prison program a little bit, right? And we started off with drug addiction. And that's what kind of led us into that, and how folks in prison are often drug addicted. And they're in this chaotic environment. Right? Drugs are kind of a lure to people. They're fascinating. And even despite all the horrible elements of them, we can become captivated, right? And Genko talked about how she offers these people an alternative, right? And entices them in a sense with something, right? And that quiet is a pretty significant, substantial commodity in a prison environment, right? Because of the noise and the drama and such. And so ultimately, and she's successful in doing this, luring people sometimes. But we did find it interesting that we wound up, you know, with sort of this, what you've snipped out of there ends with the enticement with these beautiful attractive elements that the children are willing to go to. But the next step, of course, is not there, which is all the hard work that comes. You know, it's like it's an enticing path. I think a lot of us wind up thinking of Zen and or some meditation practices, you know, kind of calls to us, but we come in naive and maybe think it's going to be easier and more spectacular and give us something quite different than we ultimately find that it does. And I don't know, it's kind of a meandering little.
No, that's great. That's exactly right. You know, it's in a way we've all been really blessed by hearing the Dharmas. Somewhere along the line, we not only did someone say it, but we could receive it. You know, some people hear the Dharma, but they can't receive it. So I'm thinking what you're saying is, you know, those people in the prison are hungry for the Dharma.
Some subset, anyway.
Yeah, so it's both sides. There's the teacher and the student. You have to have both. And we are so lucky. Everyone here. That way. Thank you.
Do we pass the test?
There's no test. I guess I was just hoping that you could take it in and see how it relates in your life. And what's the appropriateness or the skillfulness and the effective? What's effective? And in a way, we're all teachers. You know, we're teaching all the time. We may not be conscious of what we're teaching, but are we teaching patience? Are we teaching generosity? Thank you.
Who's next?
Could you say your name too when you get the mic?
This is Brenda. Hi. So our group discussed how the elder met these children where they were as children. And his intention was to rescue them. And initially, he had tried to tell them about how terrible things were. But as children, they couldn't see that. So they needed, like it was just mentioned, an alternative. And I think about my work as a psychotherapist, maybe similar to going into prisons, but just not imposing maybe my will or telling people that what they're doing or where they are is wrong per se, but giving this something else that they could use instead. Yeah.
Yeah, so in the prose, I think I mentioned in the prose, he also just considers just carrying them out. You know, at first he's just like, this, you know, tells them, get out of here, you know, like, this is wrong, this is bad, get out of here. And really what he ends up doing is he thinks what's appropriate for them. What do I know about my children that they would really hear, that will make them? And in the end, we can't make anybody do anything. I sometimes can't even make myself do things. But he presents it in a way so the kids on their own accord, and that's in spiritual life, in spiritual practice, we come on our own accord. It's the only way we come. So, and he thinks about that. That's the example. So, yeah. Thank you. A couple more?
Seems like I started reading.
Sure.
My name is Kyle. So our group mostly discussed the beginning portions on the state of our house, the state of the interior of the house as well, and feeling that combination of the state of instability in our toxic culture, political environment, and staying true to our personal values in that, you know, our houses can feel battered against and cracked in that type of environment. And we also spoke about comparing ourselves to the elder and the feeling of urgency when you are watching someone or something that needs saving, and how there is very much so that very immediate desire to stop everything and just exert your will upon the thing being saved, when most often that's not what they actually need. And it's not what's skillful, as difficult as it is.
I'm glad you picked up on that urgency piece. Yeah, when you put yourself in his place, I mean, his beloved children, I mean, what you care about most, probably yourself. And yet we constantly are putting ourselves out there in this inhospitable place. And the urgency that you come to practice sometimes, you know, when you start to see how unstable the world is, and you have that urgency to be here and meditate and practice. So, yeah. Great. Thank you. I just want to read a little bit of the prose as kind of to the end of it. So this is the Buddha. He says to them, "None of you should be happy dwelling in the burning house of the threefold world. Do not crave its crude forms, sounds, sense, taste, and sensations. If you become attached to them and learn to cherish them, you will be burned up by them. You need to get out of this threefold world quickly so that you can have the three vehicles, the Sravaka, the Pratikabuddha, and the Buddha vehicles. I now make this promise to you, and it will never turn out to be false. Just apply yourselves and make the effort." That's a promise. I love it when they promise us. So, the Tathagata uses these skillful means to bring people to act, and then says to them, "You should know that the teachings of these three vehicles are praised by the sages. With them you will be free from attachment and bondage and will not need to rely on or seek anything else. Riding in these three vehicles, you will gain flawless roots, powers, awareness, ways, meditations, liberation, concentration, and so forth. And then, enjoying yourself, you will be able to delight in the infinite peace and comfort." Yes! That's the Lotus Sutra. So basically, awakening is more of a road than a destination. That's what we, most of us, have found. And that there's a great responsibility. It's a, as much as it is an achievement. So I think these parables have a lot to teach us going forward. And Genko's going to take one of the chapters from the back half, the second half of the book. So you'll see the difference in what's being brought forward. So, and luckily, we're one right after the other. So anything else? I think it's time to go. But anything else? Huh? Vespers. Okay. Thank you so much. I wanted to say in the fall, Kakumio and Koin are going to be teaching the Lotus Sutra. So if you were interested in this, I highly recommend it.